This morning, I'm hoping that you will you'll really go with me on this. I'm going to take a huge risk, step way outside of all comfort zones, and this morning I'm going to speak from a text other than Galatians. I think it can be done. I've enjoyed being in Galatians immensely, and this morning I want to begin a sermon series through the summer months. Mostly taken from the Old Testament, not entirely, but mostly taken from Old Testament books of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, and 1 and 2 Kings. And the theme that we're going to be looking at is our weakness, God's strength. In our weakness, God is made strong. We're going to be looking at the ways that in our human weakness and frailty, in our times of sickness, discouragement, grief, our various ways of experience weakness, that in those times God shows himself to be true and powerful, and those will be our themes through the summer months. We begin at nighttime this morning. We begin at night. We're in ancient Shiloh. We're in this ancient sanctuary of the children of Israel, this important place in Israel, because it was really the only place that Israel connected as one people. They were 12 separated tribes spread all over the land of Canaan, and yet the families from all over these various tribes would travel at different times of the year. Once a year, every family would make an effort to travel to Shiloh, where they would offer their sacrifices, and they would bring their deepest longings before the Lord, and they would offer their prayers, and they would worship there at Shiloh every year. And we're at Shiloh now. We're at the sanctuary of Shiloh, and there are two people in the sanctuary now. The place is quiet except for these two. The sun has given up its last efforts to peek over the western horizon, and Eli, the old priest, is asleep in a room adjacent to the sanctuary. Already his breathing is becoming deep and rhythmical, and his deep and rhythmical breathing is becoming deep and rhythmical snoring, and the occasional snort that wakes up every animal within a mile or so around. Eli is asleep in one room. He's the priest of Shiloh of many, many, many years. And in the room adjacent to him in the sanctuary, not far from the most important symbol of God's presence in all of Israel, the Ark of the Covenant, not far from there is Samuel laying on a mattress on the floor. He's a young boy. He's twitching to and fro, thinking back through the events of the day and thinking about the events of tomorrow. He is young, and he is small, and he is a child. He's a Nazarite, Samuel is. That means that when Samuel was just a very small child, when he had just been weaned by his mother had dedicated him to God's service. She had brought him to Shiloh, and she had left him here at this sanctuary to be mentored by Eli in the arts of priesthood. And so we are in Shiloh this evening. It is quiet except for the sound of the crickets that are playing their orchestral song outside. And there's one detail about this story that you need to know to make sense of it. And that detail is that in those days, the word of the Lord was rare. That means that the Lord who had spoken to their ancestors had not been heard very much in this particular generation. And so it is no surprise that as Eli was laying there and the Lord calls him, Eli mistakes the source of the call. Instead of recognizing it as the voice of God, he jumps up out of his mattress and he runs across the cold stone floor on his bare feet. He pushes his way into Eli's room and he says, "Here I am, you called?" And Eli, the old man, says, "I didn't call you, Samuel. Go back to bed." I suppose it's not that surprising, really, if you think about it. There are strange games that your imagination can play on you, especially when you're out in the open country, as Shiloh was, and the sounds of nature. Who knows? Samuel's thinking to himself. Maybe it was the wind whistling through the trees. He plods his way back to his little mattress on the floor, and he lays back again and begins thinking through the events of tomorrow, all the grasshoppers that need to be caught, all of the frogs that need to be chased, and the voice addresses him again, "Samuel." Now, the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to Samuel. Samuel did not know the Lord. And so once again, it is not surprising that he misplaces the source. He jumps up out of the bed now a second time, makes his way across the cold floor into the room of Eli. "Here I am, you called me." The old man has now been awakened twice by the young boy. "I didn't call you. Go back to bed." And back he plods on cold feet back into the little bed, and he lays there again. Who knows what in the world's going through his mind now? Twice he's been certain that he was called by name. And yet twice he was mistaken, and a third time the voice comes to him. A third time. There's no mistaking it. It is absolutely certain he has been called by name. Three times. Samuel now pops up out of the bed for the third time and begins to make his way back across to Eli's room, still mistaking the source of the voice because the word of the Lord was rare in those days. You know, there's a couple of different ways that you can interpret that statement. The word of the Lord was rare in those days. One way of interpreting that statement is that God wasn't speaking very much in those days. God, who had spoken to Abraham and Sarah and Moses and Miriam and down through the generations, just wasn't talking very much in those days. God was silent. There are those people who have fit this notion into very airtight theologies. There are folks who have said, once upon a time, God created the heavens and the earth, and God set the world in motion, sort of like a clockmaker sets a clock in motion. By the way, anybody remember clocks that actually ticked? They used to make them that way. I don't know if you can remember any of those. And there is a group of people who believe that God had created the world and set it in motion and then stood back at such enormous distance that God just sort of lets the world run itself. There are lots of people who still believe that today, that the world is just simply running under the laws that God has created for it, and God is not speaking. There's one. That's one way of interpreting the phrase, "the word of the Lord was rare in those days." But there's another way of interpreting that phrase too, and that is, God is speaking, but people aren't listening. Or God is speaking, and people aren't able to listen. They have grown so deaf and so incapable of hearing that the word of the Lord is rare in their days. I wonder some days, if a future generation that is more advanced in the ways of the Spirit than ours will look back on our generation and they will say, "The word of the Lord was rare back in the early decades of the 2000s. If that is the case, if people will one day describe ours as a generation in which the word of the Lord was rare, it won't be because of a lack of information. There is more than enough information about God. This week, Jim Lafoon, who read the passage of Scripture for us this morning, pulled out his cell phone. He has a smartphone. Now, this is not a smartphone. This is a fairly dense and dumb phone that wishes that it were a smartphone. Jim Lafoon pulled out his smartphone for me this week, and he poked an icon on his smartphone, and he showed it to me, and he said, "Steve, I can download just about any version of the Bible from this application right here." I said, "That's incredible." He said, "Well, yeah, that's not all." He said, "I push this button right here, and I can download the entire commentary series of Matthew Henry on my cell phone. All of it, the whole thing. If you've ever seen it, it's a massive commentary, enormous. I wonder, by the way, when he does that, does his phone suddenly get heavier? I'm not sure. All of that at his fingertips, at our fingertips in the year 2012. The entire Bible and every version of it you could imagine and commentaries galore on our cell phones. And if that doesn't do it for you, well, I don't have a smartphone, but I do have an iPod. This is a Nano. Sometimes when I go running, I like to put in the earplugs and I like to put in my iPod Nano and I like to listen to some really good music. And sometimes I like to download lectures. I can put lectures on my iPod and I can run and I can listen to theology instructors who are teaching in places like Harvard and Princeton and Anderson, and I can download their sermon, their series, and I can put them on my iPod. I can listen to sermons, all kinds of them. I can listen to David Jeremiah. I can listen to Beth Moore. I can download hundreds of different communicators right here on my iPod any day of the week, and I can go running and listening to their sermons. If I'm incredibly, incredibly tired and yet suffering from insomnia, I can download the podcast from First Church of God in Alma right here on my iPod. And if that doesn't work for you, I have my Kindle right here. And on my Kindle, I can download commentaries. I can download for free many of the finest Christian books that have ever been written, classics, some of the great, great books in Christian history. For the click of a button, I can download them here on my Kindle, and I can read them anytime I want. And then, just in case you're kind of old-fashioned and you want to do things the old-fashioned way, you could also, of course, do it on the computer if you wanted to do it the old-fashioned way. And on my little laptop, I can download and stream sermons and lectures and communication and books, and all of it is there. We have more information before us in the 21st century than all other centuries of Christianity combined. More information about God, about the Bible, about the Holy Spirit. And yet, I wonder if that's part of the problem. I wonder if we're a generation that has mistaken information for formation. And I wonder if we're a generation that has mistaken technology and speed for what can only be done slowly and with discernment. I read recently that Woody Allen, in his stand-up routine, he says to the people in his audience, "I took this speed reading course. I took this speed reading course, and I can now read 5 times faster than I could when I began taking this speed reading course. In fact, over the weekend, I read all of War and Peace over the weekend. I think," he said, "I think it was about Russia." We are a generation that is obsessed with information. We're a generation that is obsessed with speed, and we're obsessed with technology. And yet, if a future generation looks back on us and says of us, "In those days, the word of the Lord was rare," it will be because we have mistaken information for formation. We have been concerned about being right instead of being open. We have been obsessed with being in control rather than learning discernment and guidance. And we have been obsessed with being certain rather than walking with open heart and open mind into a future that is brought before us as an adventure. The word of the Lord, the text says to us, the word of the Lord was rare in those days. Now, we're not the first generation, of course, for whom this is true. Think about Samuel now. Think about Samuel laying on his little mattress there. If Samuel had been acquainted with the word of the Lord, the very first time he was called, Samuel would have said, "Yes, Lord, here I am," and he would have recognized that the one who was speaking to him was the very same one who had spoken to Abraham and Sarah centuries earlier, calling them into an adventure and into a new future. If Samuel would have been acquainted with the word of the Lord, at least the second time he would have recognized the voice who was calling him was exactly the same as the voice who said to Moses, "Take off your shoes. You're standing on holy ground now." If Samuel had been acquainted with the word of the Lord the third time for sure, if he had some foreknowledge as well, the third time Samuel would have said, "Ah, the voice that will one day speak to Mary, the mother of Jesus, don't be afraid. The child that is conceived of you is of the Holy Spirit. Don't be afraid. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High God." If Samuel would have been acquainted with the word of the Lord, times 1, 2, and 3, he would have recognized this is the voice that would one day come in Jesus of Nazareth. And his voice would be so united with the voice of God that John, the gospel writer, would say of Jesus, "He is the Word become flesh." 3 times now, God has spoken to Samuel. 3 times now, Samuel has not recognized the one who's calling him. The third time now, he gets up out of his mattress and begins plodding across the floor more slowly now. He's thinking to himself, "I wake up that old man one more time, he's probably going to club me with his cane." He's got on his motorcycle helmet now as he walks into Eli's room. "Here I am. You called?" Now, to be fair to Samuel, Eli has been pretty slow on the uptake here as well. Can you imagine that? A dense pastor? Eli now is beginning to realize what's going on. And Eli, the old man, becomes what he should be all along, Eli, the mentor. And Eli says to Samuel, "Son, I think the Lord is trying to speak to you. The next time you go back and you lay down, if the voice calls to you again, say, 'Speak, Lord, your servant is listening.'" And so Eli plods back on his bare feet back to the mattress, and he lays down, and the voice of the Lord addresses him one more time. And this time, Samuel responds, "All right, Lord, I'm listening." Pay attention to what's happening here, because with those words, a young boy who is obsessed with being right becomes a young boy who is open. And somebody who is obsessed with knowing with certainty becomes somebody who's interested in guidance. And somebody who is obsessed with having things his way is all of a sudden becoming someone who wills to will what God wills. And all of that with this extraordinary little prayer, "Speak, Lord, I'm listening." I wonder, how many times would the Lord have repeated his call to Samuel? Would the Lord have called him a fifth time? How about a sixth? Do you think the Lord might have called Samuel a seventh time? How about 70 times seven? You see, this morning, what we're looking at is the irrepressible word of the Lord. The word of the Lord that will not be stopped. The word of the Lord that calls and calls and calls and calls, even though it falls upon deaf ears, and it calls and it calls and it calls until those deaf ears are finally opened. Ah, finally, I understand who it is who is speaking to me. And the first thing that the word of the Lord does when he breaks through our deafness, the very first thing the Lord does is to inspire and to invite this prayer. "Speak, Lord, I'm listening." Friends, all of the world changes when that becomes our prayer. Everything changes for us. We move from people who are so committed to getting God to do what we want God to do to becoming people who are willing what God wills. We become people who are so closed and so right, who are people who are open and who are facing our lives in adventure. And we become people who are certain that we know what we want to do to people who are inviting God to lead us. "Speak, Lord. Your servant is listening." I suspect that there are at least a handful of us here today who aren't certain that God has ever spoken to us that clearly. Maybe a handful. A handful of us who are thinking to ourselves, "Boy, I wish the Lord would call me by name." And what I want to say very gently and very tenderly to you is, I think the Lord's been calling you and the Lord's been calling me by name for years and years and years. And sometimes we experience it as longing. And even in this moment, if you long for God to be speaking, I'd like to propose that that is evidence that God already is speaking and calling you. Now, I'm going to ask you to forgive me as I become autobiographical for a moment. I want to describe some of my longings, which in retrospect I believe to be God speaking to me over the years. I remember when I was in sixth grade, and for the first time ever, I became profoundly aware of my longing for acceptance. I think it had been there for a long time, but I was in sixth grade, I remember, when I became aware of the longing. There were the students who were the in students, and then there were the rest of us. And I remember longing for acceptance. And I wouldn't have put this language to it when I was in the sixth grade, but today I would call it the longing for community, the longing for fellowship, at which Christ is the center, a longing that was being awakened in me when I was in sixth grade. I believe that God was calling me by name. It was somewhere around that same time that I turned on the television one evening. In those days, we only had one TV. It was a black and white TV, and it got only one television station. So if you wanted to watch TV, you watched what was on. That's just the way it was. And one evening, I went down and I turned on our black and white television, and Billy Graham Crusade was on. I was so frustrated and disappointed, but I didn't have anything else to do, so I sat down bored and irritated for a few minutes. I can't tell you a word about the content of that program that night, except that I remember a longing inside of me, a longing, as I listened to his words. Today I would call it a longing for righteousness, a longing to be right with God. I remember just a few years later, at sort of a tail end of a time of making some of my worst decisions ever, there was an evening at the tail end of that process when a good friend of mine and I had found somebody to buy alcohol for us, and we'd gone to a park, and we'd lied to our parents, and we did stupid things, and at the end of the evening, he staggered back to his house, and I staggered back to mine. Fortunately, it was a long walk home. I had a long way to walk and to think, and when I was about a block away from our house, I remember walking toward the house, and I remember this thought impressing itself upon me, all of a sudden, utterly surprising. The thought was, if you keep doing this, you're going to have serious trouble. And by the way, I didn't. And today, I would describe that as a longing for wholeness. It didn't end there. I remember the process that led me to the church and hearing the gospel and opening my heart and life to Christ. But it didn't end there. I want to be very clear. The longing did not end when I became a Christian. I remember when I was in my young 30s and I was an associate pastor in Casper, Wyoming. And in those days, all of the associate pastors in this large church sat up on the platform while the pastor was in front of us preaching. And so we were seated in our chairs back here, and I was looking out across the pastor, and I was looking at the congregation seated like you all are. And the doors were open in the very back of the sanctuary, and the light was streaming in from outside into the sanctuary. And I remember sitting there during the sermon. I have no idea what my pastor was speaking about that day, true confession. I do know that I was overcome with a longing to be connected with the least of these. How do you explain that? A longing to be connected with those whom the Gospels describe as the poor and the blind and the crippled and the lame. A longing that somehow my life might be connected to theirs. Today, I call that God's call to love my neighbor and to love God. I remember a year ago, just about 1 year ago, I was over at the library, over here at Alma Library. The president of the college had invited a number of us to meet together at the library, probably 40 people gathered around these tables, to talk about Gratiot County, to dream together about Gratiot County. And I remember sitting there with a number of people around these tables. I didn't say a word. I just listened all evening long. And I remember being overcome with a sense of love for this community, what we can be in Central Michigan as good opportunities invade and take hold of us. How do you explain all of that? I believe that God has been speaking. And I believe that God has been calling. And I believe God has been speaking and calling to every person in this room irrepressibly, again and again and again and again, calling you and calling me by name. And the first gift that is granted to us when we hear and we finally recognize after 700 times 7,000 repeated times, when we finally recognize, oh, the source of that call, the first gift to us is the opportunity and the privilege of saying, "Speak, Lord. I am your servant, and I am listening." The truth be told, I have also grown dense 700 times 7,000 times. The truth be told, I have gone back to being more concerned with being right that I am with being guided. Truth be told, again and again and again, I've gone back to being in love with information rather than being most concerned with the formation of the Spirit in my life. But the wonderful news, church, is that God is still speaking. And he's speaking again today and again and again and again and again, calling you and me by name and inviting us to pray in this moment, and in every moment, inviting us not only to pray, but to live inside this prayer, which is the prayer of adventure. Speak, Lord. Your servant is listening. I have a hunch that prayer speaks to you right where you are this morning, many, many, many people here. And I want to invite you to enter into that prayer even now. Ron and Jackie, would you come lead us? I'm going to open these altars this morning. If you would like to come and begin to pray that prayer here, or where you are seated, and as you leave. And friends, I want to just invite you to take this prayer with you everywhere you go, in all of the little open spots in your lives, in the morning when you get up, at night before you go to bed, in all the little places, every time it comes back to your mind. Offer this prayer of openness. Speak, Lord, your servant is listening. These altars are open if you wish to come at this time.